The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly from The Guardian. I'm Alex Kratosky. And it's the summer. It's lovely and sunny outside, so we've decided to decamp to our favorite cafe. And on this week's podcast, we'll be finding out more about Facebook's new safety features for underage users. Some are calling it a panic button, but the social networking service says it's not. Joining me in this cafe to discuss this week's stories are The Guardian's digital media correspondent Jemima Kish, European editor of TechCrunch Mike Butcher, and Christian Segastrelli, VP and general manager of web game company Playfish, and also of Electronic Arts. Welcome, Jemima.
Hola.
Ah, yes, es Spanish. Spain won the World Cup.
A little homage to España.
How will
in
you?
A French accent.
Yes, suddenly we're becoming very European here. Well, it was a European final. How will you fill your time now, Jemima, now that the World Cup is finished?
It won't be any different at all because I didn't take any notice of it at all, apart from the octopus, which is quite cool.
You know, as a Finn, you can be impartial. So, you know, you support just about everyone.
Have you ever been in the World Cup?
No, sadly. No.
Oh, bless.
We've tried to qualify many times. Right? I think I might make the team if I tried.
Well, you're very good at logging and mobile telephony, so you're fine. It's much more important.
Well, there you go, Jemima Kish with the economic forecast for Finland. On that bombshell, keep listening for the next 30 minutes to Tech Weekly from The Guardian. Here's this week's technology news. First, Facebook announced that it will provide a panic button-style safety feature on its website for underage users to use when they feel their online security has been compromised. The system, recommended by the Child Exploitation and Online Protection Center, or CEOP, and other child protection organizations around the world, but initially rejected by the social networking site, will be implemented as an optional add-on to the website. Jemima, talk us through how it'll work.
Well, it's very easy to call it a panic button. Actually, it's not a panic button at all. It's just an app. There are thousands and thousands of apps on Facebook, as we know. And this was Facebook's initiative. They went to CEOP, which, as a public agency, obviously, perhaps isn't quite as imaginative and inventive in thinking about how it could reach out to younger web users as perhaps it might be if it was better funded. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. It took 2 months to come up with, and basically, It will be a sort of a link through to CEOP's warning services to alert the police or the relevant sort of authority, but only if you add it to your profile. And CEOP's problem really is that it's a very ugly, dull brand. And although the name CEOP is known to quite a lot of school kids now because they do work in schools, when you think about something like Talk to Frank, the government's anti-drugs campaign, that's so much more engaging and imaginative, and a much more successful way of reaching out to kids. So it's great that they've got an application, but its success depends on how viral it will be, and how likely are kids going to be to want to add an application that says CEOP with a really ugly logo to their profile, because it's just not that attractive.
So, Mike, do you think that there will be substantial take up by this audience?
Well, I think there's... I'd take a slightly more devil's advocate position on this and applaud what CEOP's done. What I think they've done is they've actually entered much more into a conversational style of marketing towards young people about this issue, which I think is actually totally appropriate for the platform. Let's face it, if you say to a teenager, please add this panic button immediately, or you force them to do something, they'll immediately run a mile. But if you actually engage them in some sort of dialogue, and then they can actually become advocates of something and tell their friends, I think this is potentially a lot more powerful. And I think it's baby steps here, what CEOP's doing. And it's quite clear that they've entered into a conversation with Facebook and actually said, how do we actually engage with this platform in a sort of constructive manner, rather than adding a big, you know, big red panic button on top of everything, which really ultimately implies that their whole place is full of danger, when that's really not the case at all either. So I think you need a kind of a sophisticated response.
Now, Christian, your company has a close relationship with Facebook. Your games are enormously successful on the website, and you're therefore pretty familiar, probably more familiar than all of us, with the target audience for the CEOP app. How do you think the kids will respond to this?
You've got to start somewhere. Unlike many other sort of
initiatives which are out in the, if you like, real world versus the digital world, this one actually you can go out and test. One of the things that we have in common with Facebook, and we're huge believers in iterative product development, where you get something out, you see how people use it, you see what feedback you get, what the data is, how people actually end up, you know, whether it's fulfilling the goals or not, and then you tweak it, and then you change it, then you try it out. Maybe you do some A-B testing of trying it one way on one user and another way on another user in order to figure out how you get the best, how you get to the best outcome. And I think it's a great initiative. I think we applaud it. It's right for youngsters, and it's an important initiative across the board. And I think it's good that they are starting somewhere, and I think they have clearly work to do, but I think it's the right thing is to get something out there and start learning from it, because it's very difficult to second guess, especially that demographic.
And Jemima, which websites around the world would you say have provided effective child safety systems?
I don't think there's anything really comprehensive that's been completely successful so far, because the problem is that a service can be really easily abused. So if you want to, you know, be really naughty and get one of your friends in trouble, then you're going to report them for abuse. And that is the problem about putting a single one-link panic button on every page. And that's why Facebook hasn't wanted to go down that route. I agree with Mike and Christian, obviously, that this is really, really important, and that it's great that CEOP are moving more towards a conversational solution, which, of course, is exactly what they should be doing. But I think we've yet to see something completely comprehensive and effective. I suspect it would be down the route of doing what Talk to Frank did with the videos of Pablo the Drugs Mule, if you remember that. It was really funny and engaging, and it really got people talking about it. So it's going to be a combination of things, I think.
Also this week, Google announced a new development technology that allows anyone to create applications for their Android platform. The search engine has stood behind their decision to keep their mobile system as open as possible, eschewing the review process of their close competitors, the dominant Apple App Store, and they hope that this new system opens the marketplace to a larger community. Jemima, there's been some criticism amongst developers that this will produce light applications. What do you expect out of the system?
The concern is really for kind of serious developers that this is all a bit too easy, and you're going to get applications that are not high enough quality because they're all kind of out of the box, that people aren't really learning coding skills because all of that is kind of masked in the Android developer tool, and also that you might end up with applications that aren't that imaginative. I can kind of see their points, but it's not a replacement for you know, building something properly. It's a supplement, and if it introduces people to and kind of softens and familiarises them with how an app is constructed, even from an overview, I think that's got to be a good thing, and good on them for doing it. It certainly gives them one over Apple.
Christian, there are several white label games development platforms out there on the market. And how do you, as a professional game developer, feel about the products that these development platforms create?
So, I mean, overall, I mean, the history of computer games has become more and more platformized. These days, if you develop a big $10 million, $50 million product, chances are you're going to be using engines and existing code that somebody else has developed in order to help you, whether it's rendering the graphics or doing the physics in the game or doing other things. So I think these development platforms are a good thing, and they will ultimately save time and save money for the developer. And to the extent that we can hence get higher quality consumer applications, great. I also think, though, that in order to, especially on mobile devices where computing power is limited, in order to create truly great experiences, many times you have to actually develop as close as possible to the actual hardware. And the more layers of abstraction you have in the way, the less performance you are ultimately able to get out of that hardware. So I think it's a balance. I think generally development platforms are great and engines are great, but you have to look at what's the consumer experience going to be. Is it right for the console? Is it right for the application and for the game and for the consumer to be using it? And if so, great, go ahead. If not, you know, then don't use it. But I think either way, the more tools and engines are available, the better.
Mike, what do you think this decision of Google's is going to do to the power play between the App Store and the iPhone and Google's Android platform?
Absolutely nothing at all. I think it's a bit of a laugh. I mean, I remember that back in the day, people debating about whether or not you should develop websites using Front Page or whether you should hand code them in HTML. It's kind of a bit of fun, really. I mean, probably somebody's going to come out, and if you've seen the the Google video put out of somebody developing an app to make it look like a cat is purring. I mean, that's basically what we're going to end up with out of this kind of thing. There's a lot of really simple apps. Somebody might actually have a nice little hit out of it, which would be kind of fun. But serious Android developers won't be using this at all. It will just sort of democratise the whole thing, and there'll be some fun stuff coming out of it, but I don't think it'll have much impact.
Well, frankly, there is a lot of that kind of thing on the App Store anyway, isn't there?
Cats
exactly, purring, yeah. And beer drinking.
It's so much easier to create that kind of app now.
Finally, the latest co-working establishment was launched in London. Tech Hub, a collaboration between digital consultant Elizabeth Barley and you, Mike, opened its doors.
Indeed.
You can hear the background on this project in an interview with Tech Weekly with Elizabeth a few weeks ago. But Mike, tell us the latest.
Well, the latest, we're up and running. We've got a co-working space that you can join for £300 a year and just pop in and use it for £10 a day. Or we've got permanent desk spaces for £275 every month for, you know, people who want to kind of their own desk and their own drawers and etc. The idea is much more built around clustering, creating a community of technology people, whether they're developers in the mobile space or the web space, and small, you know, 2, 3, 4 person companies who can cluster around each other and use, you know, developers from these guys and UI developers and product marketers and PR, maybe the odd PR person or journalist floating around even that can talk to the tech community. But also, you know, almost like a dropping centre for that kind of part of London where there are lots of other existing technology companies and a place to lay your hat when you're in town from, you know, Europe or the US.
Or Brighton, for example.
Brighton, indeed.
Interesting, yes. But you've, along the way, since we've spoken with Elizabeth, you've managed to pick up some AAA partners. I know that Google's involved now, for example.
Yes. The first founding partner was Pearson, who now a third of their revenues come from digital, and they're really fascinated by the idea of getting some startup and tech DNA back into their company, and they'll be hanging around and talking to people. It's much easier than sponsoring a conference where you come away with a pen or something, but really what you want to do is just have some really good conversations with people, you know, much more casually. And then secondly, Google came on board, which was absolutely fantastic, and they're really excited about working with Tech Hub to create Tech Hub as a space for Android developers, as particularly and any kind of Google Apps developers and open source developers who want to use Google technologies or open source technologies. So we really want to make it a vibrant, humming place for developers and startups.
You can read up on these stories and the latest headlines on guardian.co.uk/technology. The technology community thought it was immune from the economic downturn, but one look at the number of digital consultants that have populated the business social networking platform LinkedIn suggests that, in fact, this sector is also feeling the crunch, despite the hype. However, one area that seems to have avoided the difficulties is the gaming industry, a shining creative star in the UK technology scene. Now, Christian, your company Playfish has been one of the most successful game startups of the past 2 years, developing close relationships with social networking platform Facebook and subsequently being acquired by AAA gaming giant Electronic Arts. Has the games industry really been immune to the downturn?
I don't think the games industry has been immune in the sense that I think there has been some challenges in the packaged goods product business in the games industry. But I think where the games industry can look forward to a bright future really is in the digital market, because at the end of the day, the games industry is in the middle of this tectonic plate shift away from physical products toward digital services. And at the same time as the physical product industry has been, you know, to some degree affected by the downturn, although perhaps not as much as many other industries, you've had an explosion in digital gameplay, mainly on social networks like Facebook right now. And it's brought in so many new people into the games industry. Right now, there's over 200 million monthly unique players playing games just on Facebook, and that's many times the total people playing games on all other platforms combined. So it's just a massive new audience that the whole games industry can tap into. So I think the games industry is pretty positive on the outlook from that perspective.
Facebook has clearly been absolutely critical in your growth, and that's fueled casual gaming, which has been quite astonishing. But in a way, isn't it quite dangerous to be so dependent on one external company that could, you know, just decide to, say, introduce its own gaming platform next week, and then that would be a really big problem for you?
So Facebook has done a great job at creating a fantastic hangout for people where people can share and socialize with their friends. while being online. And I think what they've done really well over the past few years is really creating that environment where tons and tons of people hang out. Their last published figures were 400 million monthly uniques hanging out at Facebook alone. And what they've done to the games industry really is to provide, if you like, that infrastructure of knowing who your friend relationships are in order for you to then be able to use those in-game. And many other platforms have done this also, you know, MySpace and Bebo and others. And we've launched, frankly, on all of those platforms. It just so happens that right now consumers have chosen Facebook, and most consumers do hang out on Facebook. And I think one of the great things about games on Facebook is that it's genuinely a symbiotic relationship, in the sense that those games do drive engagement on the platform, while at the same time, so effectively providing people with things to do on the platform while the platform provides the infrastructure. So one way to look at it is like Facebook has created a great park for friends and family to hang out, sort of in a digital sense. We kind of provide the toys for that. It really is genuinely a symbiotic relationship.
And also Apple's introduction of a network into its own operating system, I think, is really interesting, and that could have great implications for you guys as well.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, if you think of where games have come from, I mean, when people play in the park or play at cards at home on the weekend, they don't play by themselves, they play with friends, because it's much more fun and interesting to play with people that you know. And if you think of the computer games industry, the big pioneers recently of this was really Nintendo, launching the Nintendo Wii, not as the console with the best graphics or the most immersive standalone experiences, but rather as the console that you play together with your family and friends at home. But I guess the bottom line is that those social gaming experiences, I think it's been a mega trend in the industry more broadly, ranging from SingStar to Rock Band to, you know, to Wii Sports, where really the social gameplay is what it's all about. And what social networks have done is really to extend our ability to leverage that trend online in addition to offline.
Personally, quite interested in this other story on the other side of the coin of the social games acting as effectively a sort of a Trojan horse for Google to start to rebuild its own social network. There's been reports in the media about Zynga, which has lots of games on Facebook, possibly being, you know, in collusion. There's sort of lots of interesting conspiracy theories at the moment about how Google might use social games to rebuild people's social graphs almost onto Google, so, because it's all about search. Obviously Google is all about search, and it can't look into Facebook, it's blocked off. So what happens when social games really become the engine of the next wave of search? That's another sort of a whole other fantastic, fascinating aspect of the story.
Catch up on Playfish's games and check out our coverage of the gaming scene at guardian.co.uk/technology/games. That's all for this week. Many thanks to our studio guests, or shall I say our cafe guests, Jemima Kish, Mike Butcher, Christian Segastrelli. Next week, we'll be coming to you from Develop, the UK's biggest games event. Keith Stewart will be speaking with the makers of Mass Effect, Monkey Island, and Fable. So come back next Tuesday to get your gaming fix. I'm Alex Kratosky. The producer was Scott Cawley. See you next Tuesday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.